Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Anthony Mangione. And how are you?
Dude, where was the heavy metal? You just like cut out on the heavy metal.
I cut out. There's too much going on. There's just too much.
I gotcha. Okay. Doing
well. We're all business tonight. That's good. Oh, you know, battling a little respiratory illness, but I'm okay. And we've got Michael Joe on.
My wife is. Everybody in the whole family is. Eesh. Rough times.
Mike, how are you?
Hi, Mike.
Good evening, gentlemen. It's a pleasure as always.
All right. So here's where we'll start. I'll give a quick 30-second synopsis. The Rangers clinched. They get to back in because they didn't beat the Pittsburgh Penguins. They have an 8-game losing streak now at home. The thud you hear is basically every Ranger fan thinking that they don't have much of a chance in the first round against Montreal, who they are definitely going to face. All these things are true, and Nick Holden ran into Lundqvist tonight. He stayed in the game, but he was moving his shoulder in a circular way. That's never a good thing when a goalie does that. And besides the hip, he's just not going to be 100%. This doesn't look good for the Rangers. I know this sounds like an episode of, like, Batman, and we're going to sort of leave it hanging, but now we are going to leave it hanging until the playoffs start. But that's where we're at, Ant.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean, I was watching the Crosby with the shootout winner, and I was watching Lundqvist, and I was like, yeah, his movement seemed a bit impinged as he was trying to track him on that. I mean, granted, Crosby can make anybody look silly, but Henrik just didn't quite look himself, and understandably so in that circumstance. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough. I mean, again, if you're going to draw Montreal in the first round, it's going to be a tall order for them because, you know, Montreal, you know, they're a team that's really got a lot. What's that? Yeah, I mean,
they've been getting ready and they want revenge.
They want revenge. They're a physical bunch, certainly. That's something that they've certainly been able to successfully change themselves in terms of what they had been a few years ago to where they are now. They look like a more of a playoff ready team, ready to play the postseason grind. So it's a bit of a tough spot for the Rangers, no question.
Well, I have
Mike,
a solution for that. I have a solution
for
that. Send Tanner Glass right in and run Carey Price right on his knee. Because that'll even things completely. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
But you know that that'll be in the minds of the Canadians because, I mean,
sure,
that's what happened the last time these two teams met. And I think, and Russ, you pointed out on the Buzzcast more than a few times that you think that Montreal really prepared for the Rangers matchup by, you know, basically collecting every rat that they could find in the NHL that wasn't nailed down. And I think, you know, if that is the matchup and it looks like it's going to be, it's probably going to be very heated. And, I mean, I think the Rangers could win it, but based on what you're saying, you know, their matchup and Lundqvist has never played against the Habs particularly well, it's going to be challenging for them.
No doubt. So now we'll switch to the Flyers. And I have to tell you, even though they won last night, the Islanders were maybe the most unprepared team in the first period I'd seen all year. It was just, they were crazy bad on defense. But I give the Flyers credit. They won. I still think they're out of it. But interestingly enough, Carolina looks like the Flyers of last year. But, you know, what's your ultimate thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, but I think certainly Philly was fortunate enough to really kind of something they've had such, you know, times of the season where they've had ridiculously bad puck luck in terms of having chances and just not being able to cash in. And then you get this game where the Islanders basically in the first period just presented the game on a silver platter, and they just basically started grabbing it like it was a you know, grabbing at every dish like it was the local smorgasbord in the first period, pretty much with every chance that they were cashing in on. It was bizarre almost how much Philly was dominating. But then we get into the second and third, and it really – the Islanders really came on strong, you know, certainly folded in the Flyers. Flyers couldn't get a good zone exit to save their lives, and – you know, it's a strange game where you look at it and you go, 6-3, Philly looks like they ran them out of the arena. Really, it was just a terrible, terrible start for the Islanders, and they just were too far behind to catch up. But if you're looking at the total package of the game, had Philly not cashed in those chances early on, might have been a different story. But overall right now, if you're looking at the standings, Philly's just in a really – they're in a tough bind right now to be able to make up ground. I mean, at the moment, they're currently standing – so I'm looking at the standings right now, rolling them up here. Yeah, you're at 82 points right now with 77 games played. Boston's at 88 with 77. I mean, you're 6 points gap there with five games remaining on the schedule. It would take nothing short of an absolute miracle at this point. At this point for them to even have a chance of being within striking distance, I think, of that final wild card spot. So it's going to be again, they got a very interesting offseason ahead of them, no question.
Now, Mike, you had something to add about the Islanders?
Well, I mean, the two teams that puzzled me the most at the deadline were L.A. and the Islanders. L.A. because they really didn't address their scoring, and they added Ben Bishop, which seemed to be, you know, a little strange unless they didn't have any confidence in Jonathan Quick being healthy. The Islanders were in the playoff race, were within, I think, a point or two of the wild card, and did absolutely nothing. And Garth Snow is going to have to answer for that because now I think this team has collapsed. And tonight, John Tavares late in the game against New Jersey, it looked, and now Doug Waite's saying, well, we're going to check on it tomorrow and it may be fine, but it didn't look fine because he was held off the ice, and it looked like a serious knee injury. And if it is, and you know, I hope it isn't, because I think John Tavares is a fantastic player. You know, that's something that, I mean, if it's a long term injury, that's something that could affect them even in the next year.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, and going back to the Flyers, they signed Mike Vecchione. We had talked a lot about him off air. People probably know how I feel because I've been going on and on in all kinds of different shows. So I'll let them hear your feeling about him, because they already know I'm a pro Vecchione guy. So what's your feeling about the signing?
Well, Philadelphia, again, with prior experience, and they have kind of had an early look at Vecchione during developmental camp, and there was talk, obviously, that they were interested in signing him even coming out of junior season, but he wanted to go back. So Philly's always had their eyes on him as a player. Certainly his relationship with Shane Gostisbehere as well certainly is something that plays into it, although, again, Vecchione said, you know, he had to make his own decision. But the way I look at it for Philadelphia, and we've discussed this many times, and I've said this on social media as well, for everybody who talks about Philadelphia's lack of scoring depth, the real area up front that has been a concern for me has been their center depth. And beyond the front line of Claude Giroux and Sean Couturier, the team had a hodgepodge situation at third line center this season. And then if you add to the mix, in my opinion, an out of position Pierre-Édouard Bellemare centering the fourth line. Basically, the Flyers were running, in my mind, two lines at best all season, and that really kind of hurt them when things went against them. Then they make, obviously, the deal for Valtteri Filppula, but they add Vecchione to the mix. Now it looks to me like a more solidified situation down the middle, a stronger spine. And the thing is, what Vecchione brings, he's not going to – again, trying to project his scoring clip that he had this season at Union – to the NHL, that's a very, very difficult thing to expect of an undrafted player.
It is.
My expectation is his style is kind of a jack of all trades, where you can really kind of fit him in. But really, his best fit's probably going to be, again, bottom six. He'll start next year with Philly, and actually this season is too. He'll be a fourth line. He'll probably be their fourth line center. I think he immediately upgrades their fourth line position skill wise. Faceoffs, again, for those who've seen him play. No, he's one of the best guys in the country coming out of college on draws. That's an area that Philadelphia desperately has targeted, going as far back as last offseason when they signed Boyd Gordon, primarily for just those purposes, for PK and faceoffs. And you see, obviously, Vecchione has that, but he's a younger player, faster. as Ron Hextall described him as being, even though despite his height at 5'10", and we've talked about this before as well, he's not a small 5'10". He's a thickly built kid who's going to get down low on draws against bigger guys and be able to kind of dig the puck out and get it to his forwards or D on draws, depending on where he's at. He can fit in different spots, but again, he addresses a need that Philadelphia desperately needed, which was to shore up the center position with a defensively responsible player who's got, you know, by all intents and purposes, as captain at Union, a high character guy. Is he a high end skill player? Absolutely, I don't think so. But he will be a guy who, if a team is going to be building for the future, you need to have glue guys. And I think in my mind, based on what I've seen of him, I think he's one of those strong glue guys that can really sort of solidify Philadelphia's bottom end of their lineup.
Yeah, I agree. Mike, anything to add?
Not really, other than the fact that you see right now the number of college free agents that are just being added, and it's hard to ignore the fact that, you know, NHL teams, they consider these players, you know, sort of found money. It's an opportunity mm-hmm. to add a talent, add somebody who can be a depth player. And in the case of, you know, some of the, obviously Jimmy Vesey, who we talked about ad nauseum last year, a guy who could be potentially a top six forward going forward. And I think he's had a pretty decent year, a little ups and downs with the Rangers, but you know, Buffalo added CJ Smith. There are, you know, other players that mm-hmm. have just been signed. You know, these guys could help teams down the line. And I think you're going to see this more and more as the years go by.
And the one thing I would add there, Mike,
so go ahead.
The one thing I would add there too, certainly you look at a guy like Vesey versus a guy like Vecchione in this case, beyond positions as well, is whether or not, of course, if they had been drafted already, which Vesey had been, so there was
sure.
always sort of the teams that already sort of knew about them already. Whereas guys like Vecchione and like Zach Aston-Reese, these are guys mm-hmm. who were not drafted, so the expectations I think should be tamped down a little bit, but they never are.
Yeah.
I think with a lot of the college free agents versus the guys who are drafted, like a guy like Vesey.
A guy like Tyler Bozak, who was undrafted out of the University of Denver and now mm-hmm. has had a pretty good career with the Maple Leafs. People criticize him, and they, you realize this guy went undrafted. This guy came out of, I think it was out of the BCHL and then went to Denver. So he's had a pretty good career for a guy who went through, you know, seven rounds two or three times.
No question. Yeah. What I was going to say is here's the translation. Like Michael Kapler, who I saw play in a couple of games just this last week in UMass Lowell, you know, he played tonight for the Devils. It's his first game. He plays on the third pairing with Ben Lovejoy, so that's a good veteran for him to be with. Coach Hines says he liked his game, but he was a top pairing guy for UMass. And so, like, if he is going to make the Devils, he is going to only make it as a bottom pairing guy. Like, that is the translation. So people should understand that and just know that teams are filling the pipeline, and a percentage of these guys will make it, but not every one of them is going to make it.
No, I don't think it's just like the success and failure rate of, you know, a certain round in the draft. I think 15 to 20% of second round picks make the NHL. You can't expect every college free agent to make the NHL. So if you temper your expectations, every once in a while you're going to find a player who's going to be a contributor to your team.
Yeah, no doubt. So we move on. Let's talk a little bit about the Leafs. I teased it and I said, yeah, maybe we'll talk about them. But of course we were going to talk about them. And, you know, there's some talk, Mike, and this is really, you're not going to like this, I'll tell you right off the bat. But there could be a path for them to go a few rounds in the playoffs. And I know this is something that you don't want to think about, but we're here. I know when I brought it up to you 2 years ago, you didn't want to consider it, and you fought it a little this year. Now you seem to be coming around a little bit, and now we're here, and they still look pretty good.
Well, I mean, post-trade deadline, they had a little bit of a hiccup there, but, you know, in the last eight games, I think they're 6-1-1. The only loss in regulation happened to be at a game that I was at in Buffalo, where they never win. But and right now they're in a better position than, you know, say Tampa or Boston. They're up over Boston by a point, up over Tampa by 4 points. But the last five games of the regular season, they play at Buffalo and then home games against Washington, Tampa, Pittsburgh, and Columbus. Not exactly, you know, not exactly playing the Devils twice and the Red Wings twice. So, I, you know, right now, if they finished, if the season ended today, they would play Ottawa. To me, that would be a beneficial match for them because I think they have a chance to beat them. It's a team they played five times during the regular season. I don't think they would really be intimidated against playing against the Ottawa Senators. But if they go up against Washington, if they're the second wild card and they play Washington or Pittsburgh or whoever wins the Metro, I think they would get annihilated, and that's what I think is not beneficial to them. But it looks like they're going to finish third in the Atlantic.
Okay. And what do you think about them so far?
I think I agree with Mike. And Ottawa would be, I mean, it would certainly be your classic. I mean, the way Ottawa added guys at the trade deadline this year, especially guys, you know, guys who are notable agitators in many circumstances, it would be a fascinating round. And certainly seeing the Battle of Ontario sort of unfold again would be, in my mind, certainly something to watch in the first round of the playoffs there. But I do think, actually, I probably would favor the Leafs by a hair in that series and have a chance, obviously, to come out of round one and be able to do that. I would say this to Mike about the end of season schedule. The one good thing that comes out of that, though, is that it would put the Leafs in going up against those opponents in an early playoff mindset. I mean, they're already probably gearing up for that to begin with, but in many ways, they'll sort of get a real kind of gauge for potentially who they are as a team. But that being said, at the same time, when they're a team like Washington, you know, that you could also say, hey, Washington's so far ahead, maybe they're not going to be quite as focused as they would be in a regular playoff matchup. But I do think there's some benefits to having those tougher opponents at the end of the season, because they're going to get a gauge of where they're going to be at going up against these guys potentially if they do survive in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's something that's interesting. Now, I did tease the Carolina Hurricanes, where to me they do seem like they're the Flyers of last year, where, you know, a week ago you're like, yeah, I know they're winning games, but, and then now you're like, yeah, they're winning games and they're not going away. And
no, 7-0-3 in their last 10.
They seem to be having favorable things happening. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a pretty good run for them, no question. Their problem is that they feast off their home. They've been feasting off their home schedule. When they're on the road, they're not a particularly good road team. So that's the one thing. If they were a little better on the road, they could potentially be. They might have already been in the catbird seat for a wild card position this season, but that's the one drawback. That's one of the big drawbacks I think that they have. But again, to their credit, I mean, they beat Columbus, and they are, you know, that was a major opponent. They beat them 2-1, and
they're 1 point behind.
They're 1 point behind Tampa. Four off from Boston, and they're at 76 games here versus teams in front of me. But they and Tampa are both at 76, but Boston's at 77. So there's still some room there potentially for them to sneak in, no question. It's a fascinating run, certainly.
Yeah, I mean,
Mike,
points
what do you think about Carolina?
Yeah, I mean, points in 13 games in a row, it's impressive. I mean, they're going to have to do it now all with Cam Ward, because I think Eddie Lack is probably out for the rest of the year. I know they called up Alex, was it Nedlovich?
Nedlovich. Favorite prospect, actually. I like
Nedjelkovic, he's good.
Nedjelkovic, thank you. I mean, so it's going to have to be Cam Ward for every one of the six remaining games. It's just a thing. Honestly, there was a dip, I think it was in late February, just before the deadline, where, you know, they lost a whole bunch of games. And, you know, if they could have just gone 500 during that stretch, they would probably be, you know, tied or just a point behind Boston rather than 4 or 5 points behind Toronto and Boston. I look at the Hurricanes and I just say, if they could just have a little more offense. I mean, Bill Peters has got that team where I think he wants them. He's got that young defensive core. But if they had one more score, if they could just, you know, maybe get in the Matt Duchene sweepstakes in the summer or find some other top six forward to add to Aho and Jordan Stahl and the couple other kids that they have, that team would probably be a playoff contender.
Yeah, I think they're right there. I mean, Ron Francis could be up for GM of the year before we know it, but it's an interesting run. Looking at Saturday's schedule, though, they don't have it bad. They're playing Dallas, but Tampa's playing Montreal, and Boston's playing Florida. Now, of course, we look at that schedule and say, oh, it favors Boston. It's bad for Tampa. And I just – you never know. I just – this league right now, game to game, you just don't know. It's just – it's crazy. Like, I just – it's so hard to predict at the end of the year, especially – you have to be a math wizard to figure it out just point-wise.
Yeah, and besides that, again, you get just how tight it is in many cases. In this case, especially when we're trying to figure out the last wild card spot, things of that sort. It's just any little mistake that you potentially could make, you could point to potentially at the end of the season and say, "See, that's where you lost your foothold. That's where you had your chance and you lost it." So it creates such an inordinate level of pressure, but again, that's part and parcel with this time of year anyway. So in that respect, it's we just don't have any real sort of gauge on things or any way of sort of predicting. Again, I wouldn't, up until that case, again, we'll come back to Carolina again. You told me they were playing the Blue Jackets. I would have been like, as good as Carolina is, I don't think there's anywhere, I don't think they're going to be able to beat Columbus, and what are they going to do?
Mm-hmm.
They beat them 2-1, so you can't make any predictions at this point of the season. You just sort of kind of let it play out. It's going to be, again, it's a great ride, but in the prognostication area of things, it makes things particularly difficult.
Yeah,
we're just getting beat up, Mike.
When Tampa Bay played Arizona last week, I think everybody and their brother said, oh, Tampa's going to win, no problem. And then Arizona steps in the Amalie Arena and wins, and you know, okay, just throw up your hands because you just can't understand how that can happen. But, you know, teams that have no pressure on them at the end of the year, they play, you know, fast and loose, and a team that's trying to win, earn every point and get to the playoffs, you know, they'll feel the pressure and they can lose to any team on a given night. I'll tell you one thing, though, like one play, one penalty can affect a team with the races this close. The Boston Bruins, if they miss the playoffs, can thank the penalty called on Dominic Moore last week in Toronto when the game was tied 1-1 with 2 minutes to go, because that cost them that game and they lost three more games after that. So that could, if they miss the playoffs, you could point to that one penalty and say there was your season.
No, that's fair. So looking at the standings, there's one thing that I look at, and this is where I say, unless you're a Blackhawks fan, it's going to be hard to pick your team to get to the Stanley Cup. The two best home teams are Washington and Pittsburgh. And Washington right now is 31 home wins, 6 losses, 2 ties, and Pittsburgh is 29-6-4. Like, to me, when you have home ice and you're that good at home, that is something that is meaningful. And so these two teams, like, you know, one of them has to get eliminated for some other team in the East to have a chance. I mean, is it Columbus, Ant? Is there a team, or is it going to be, I guess these teams would face probably in a second round? I don't know. I always forget
they
what the new format.
Washington, but I mean, depending on how the brackets obviously set up, Washington's top end, and then you'd have Columbus, who's at, what, 106 and 105. I mean, they're going to be at the upper end of things. So would they end up drawing Montreal in round? If Montreal won their round, would they be the team in round two?
Yeah.
I don't. That's the thing. They would get Montreal, and that's tough to pick. Because, again, Montreal, they're all sort of geared up. Columbus, the thing is with Columbus, I can very easily see Columbus. I can see Columbus beating Pittsburgh. I really do.
I wouldn't count them out, but it's a tough one.
It is a tough one. It really is, and I think it would be a long, pretty savage series, I think, between those two teams. And I think, you know, Montreal could come out of that. If Montreal wins their series, they say against they come out, they're playing the Rangers. That could be a path there for Montreal, because then whoever's coming out of that Columbus-Pittsburgh series, could very well be so beat up that Montreal, as physical as they are, they might be able to grind that team down and pick Columbus again.
Before the season began, I picked Montreal to get to the Stanley Cup. I don't know if I feel strongly
might be there. If it's them and Washington in the conference finals, if we go chalk here between the two division winners, that's the one thing where you go, that's the one series that could really sort of, that could be a seven-game bloodbath, absolutely, I mean, between those two teams, because they're both built extremely well. Montreal, I think, in some ways, is an even more physical team than even the Caps are. The question is whether or not Montreal will be able to slow Washington's pace down, because they're just so good now at both ends of the ice. But again, Washington's got to get past that second round bugaboo anyway. So
yeah, Mike is going to be like Paul McGuire with the Jets. There was a year where the Jets went 10-6, but they started the year off 9-1. And every week, Paul McGuire, you know, used to play for the Buffalo Bills, for you youngsters out there, and he was also on NBC. And every single week, he picked the Jets to lose, and for 9 weeks he was wrong. And so Mike will do this with every round with the Canadians, I think. But Mike, what's your thoughts just on, you know, the way the East sort of set up? The West, we all sort of like the Blackhawks and probably feel like they're the team to beat at this point. But what do you think about the East?
Yeah, I mean, I hate the Pittsburgh-Columbus matchup because you have two teams that I'd like to see play later in the the second round or in the conference final, that are going to, one of them is going to be gone in the first round. Now, Washington would play, you know, if the season ended today, Washington would play Boston. I don't think they'd have much trouble with the Bruins. So then it sets up a Pittsburgh or Columbus versus Washington. And then again, you've got two of the top three teams in the league out by the second round. It actually gives an advantage to Montreal, because if they do beat the Rangers, they're going to either face an inexperienced Toronto team or a team like Ottawa, who right now Carlson is—he may be injured, may not be injured. He missed his first game in 4 years, and Mark Messier, you know, was chopped with the Ginsu knife by the Iron Chef, Sidney Crosby. So their defense is going to be shortened. They're without guys like Burrows and Zach Smith. So if they go in like weaker, you know, even if it's against, you know, if it's against Toronto or against Montreal, Montreal may have an easier path to the conference final, and then you have Carey Price there. So I mean, it could be a path for Montreal. I would, yeah, I think you're right. I will pick against them every single round.
See, I mean, at least you're consistent. I appreciate the consistency there. I mean, that's, you know, that's why we listen. All right. So for the last 2 minutes, we are going to have a food debate here, because I saw something ridiculous come up. And what I saw come up was, now, like, the people at Oreos, they just can't leave well enough alone. Like, somebody got into the lab and said, we have to create 100 new flavors by the end of the year, because, you know, people are just sick of the regular Oreos, right?
You saw my
post.
So
now they've gotten – I didn't see
Spring Oreos?
No.
Oh, you didn't see that one. That's the same. I thought I sent that one to you. Yeah, it's Spring Oreos, the radioactive Oreos.
Oh, that one I did. Yes, sorry, I did see that one.
Yeah, I thought
it's hard
I was
to keep
say,
up.
I did send that one to you.
Yes.
It looked radioactive.
It's hard. It's hard to keep up. But now Oreos has one where basically it's just the inside.
What?
It's literally
so it's an open-faced cookie, or there's no cookie?
It's unclear.
It's just the filling.
What is it? Clarify this. Is this where they took the top off? They took one of the ends off, and now it's just opened, or is there just the filling?
All right, hold on. I'm looking at the post here.
Yeah, please
it looks
do.
Like
this is clarification.
This is brought to you by Kentucky Fried Chicken, who had the two chicken breasts as the bread with the bacon in between.
This is the world we're in
on.
Now, though. Look at ballpark food,
okay.
Though, Mike. I mean, come on. It's gotten sort of
this
ridiculous
is the world.
Now.
I'm going to let people know they're going to have to come back and listen to the last 2 minutes if they want to hear. But this is what the deal is.
This may go 20
so,
minutes.
This is called All Stuff Oreos, right?
All
Stuff
Oreos.
Oreos.
I mean, look. I need to look at this up. Hold on. Let me type this in on my search here. All
just
stuff
the cream.
Oreos. All
just the cream.
Stuff.
And it says
oh God, let me see
cream
this.
Filling.
I need to see
just
images on this.
The,
hold on,
just
see
call
Google.
It the diabetic special. That's what you call it.
What is this nonsense?
Yeah. It's disgusting.
I mean, they've gone from the ridiculous flavors like pumpkin spice Oreos and pink lemonade Oreos. I saw that one last year. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
To I mean, come on.
But this is it for Oreos.
I think Oreos has gone the way of Lay's potato chips, because how many mm-hmm. like chicken and waffles potato chips and Southern Western queso potato chips.
Don't forget,
chips.
You also have pumpkin spice Oreos.
I just don't understand. I don't mind some new flavors, but when you have a category that's got like Oreos probably has 25 flavors now.
Oh, I like this one. Heads or tails, double stuffed Oreos. So one
That's
is chocolate, the other one is the vanilla on the other side. Let me see. What else you
How
got
many?
Here? We got pumpkin spice. Oh, the toasted coconut Oreo.
Lemon Oreos.
The hell?
It's the white vanilla cookie with lemon filling. It's
birthday cake Oreo, which I'm getting diabetes looking at it.
So they literally are selling everything but regular Oreos now. That's what they're doing.
Yeah,
you're just boring if you get like the regular, you know, chocolate Oreos with the white filling, and it's not the double stuff. It's just the regular Oreos. You're boring.
Marshmallow. What is this? The spring Oreos. That was all right. I saw that picture. I said, this is frightening. I said, this looks like something that came out of nuclear winter.
Yeah.
They were invented at
There's
3 Mile
so
Island.
Many of them.
Oh, my God. Berry Oreos. Let's see. Berry Oreos we've got. Peanut butter Oreos, which, by the way, ain't bad when it's the Reese's Oreo. That's actually pretty good. I can't knock that one. The mint Oreos have got – they used to be the one I really liked once upon a time, but now they don't taste as good as they used to. So, but that okay, that makes sense. All stuff Oreos, it's kind of like no.
Shut the doors. Shut the doors.
How does it – Here's my – man, this is a science question. I don't know if you guys could answer it.
Deconstructed Oreo, they should have called it.
Yes, that would have been a better name. Here's the thing, though. How does it stay rigid? Like, the stuff is soft. What is making this hard? Is there a cookie on the inside?
No,
I think
it's
they
Viagra.
Should have you know what they should do, Russ? Have the EPA investigate it. Oh, wait.
Oh boy!
There is no Food and Drug Administration anymore.
No, I'm saying.
Yeah, we're gonna.
This stuff's an environmental disaster waiting to happen. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I'm just afraid that if they don't sell, they'll never degrade. Like you just won't be able to get rid of them. Like the next generation of humans, you know, many 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 years from now, will find these.
You mean like a McDonald's French fry that gets that's under your seat for 6 months and it looks like it just fell there like 2 minutes before?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like that. All
I
right,
told
well.
This was going to turn into a 20-minute segment. You thought I was lying.
No, we're done. But you know, I just have to say, rest in peace, Oreos, because you've jumped the shark. You have killed it for me. That's it.
O-R-E-O.
And that's it for. And that's it for Off the Post. We'll see you.
Take care, everybody.
Sayonara.